what's going on, everybody? Welcome to Unrestricted. I'm your host, Ben Lieber. I hope you guys all had a wonderful week. My very, very special guest this week is Paul Charchian. Everybody affectionately calls him Charch. If you don't know who Paul Charchian is, well, you're going to find out. Paul Charchian is one of the most successful entrepreneurs that I know. He started Fantasy Football Weekly back in 1993. He parlayed that into Fanball.com, in which he sold that company, I'm guessing, for a lot of money. And then back through all of this, he created one of the longest running fantasy football and fantasy sports radio programs on KFAN here in the Twin Cities. In 2008, he launched LeagueSafe.com. He also has GuillotineLeagues.com, which is another fantasy football platform and methodology in which you can play fantasy football. Look, the guy has been so successful in his short life. He's already been the president of Fantasy Sports and Gaming Association, a position that he held for 11, 12 years. And he's already been named to the Fantasy Sports Hall of Fame back in 2013. He is one of the most respected voices and respected men in all of fantasy sports, not just here in the Twin Cities, but across the nation and, dare I say, across the world. So here he is, Paul Charchian on Unrestricted. What's happening, Charch?
How are you, man? Good. Glad to be here. It's taken, 65 episodes in?
I'm actually...
Now I know where I rank.
Yeah.
You remember there was a classic Seinfeld episode where it was the speed dial. They had a 10-person speed dial, and where Jerry's friends were stacked up on the speed dial, you were trying to get up to number one.
Yeah.
And who was speed dial 7, right? And that guy felt slighted, and you could see who was ahead of you.
Same no, thing. don't feel like that. This is actually going to be, I just pushed out, B-Rob was 70, so you'll be 71.
Okay, I'm 71. All right, thank you.
Yeah.
That's worse than I thought. Thank you for clarifying.
But here's the deal. I have not sat down with any of the guys from the Power Trip.
Wow.
Yet.
Okay.
Yes. And so it's just, I try to keep things a little eclectic and a little well-rounded. So
it is.
It's not always just about the people that are close to me. You know, I'm trying to reach out to people that are a little outside of the norm.
I think you had Brian Oak on, didn't you?
I had Brian Oak.
Yeah.
I was on his podcast.
Oh, that was it. You were on his.
Yes.
Okay.
I was on the Oak shows.
All right, good. Well, yeah. The important thing for me is I know that I'm 71 and Brian Oak is more than 71.
Yes. Yeah. He will be more than 71.
All right.
Although I might have to dedicate more than just an hour-ish for him.
He can carry a conversation.
He can carry a conversation, which is great. And I will admit myself, on his show, we went an hour and 20 minutes and we didn't even talk about my life with the Vikings. So I've agreed to do a part two with him because even
perfect.
I got
long-winded. All right.
So
I like it.
Yeah, but anyway, no, thanks so much for coming in. I know that you are extremely busy. We were just kind of talking off air real quickly. You're a professor. You're a freaking professor at the University of Minnesota, which is crazy to me. Of all the things that you do and the businesses that you have and everything, I feel like when I text you every once in a while, you're like, yeah, I'm jumping on a plane or I'm going here. Oh, I'm out of town here. I don't even know where you go when you jump on your planes to do all your fantasy football stuff. But you also have a responsibility of teaching our youth in America.
That's frightening. But yes, so it's been a bucket list thing since I was a kid going to the U and going to the journalism school. And so 2 years ago, I got my company in a place where I felt like I could devote some time in the off season to teaching this class. So I reached out to the U, just asked if it was possible I could be an adjunct professor. And they said yes. It took an extra year because of the pandemic. But now I'm teaching a sports journalism class at the U. And one of the great things, 70% of my class, female.
Is it really?
Yeah. I had expected it to be inverted, and the women that we've got in the class are, they're very sharp. They love their sports, and they want to have a career in sports communications, which is what I'm teaching. So yeah, it's been a challenging experience, but it's been rewarding, and it's a bucket list thing, just something I always wanted to do, Ben.
So did you know that the class was going to be 70% women?
No,
you said yes?
I had no idea.
Yeah, right. They're like, hey, this class is 70%. I'm in. Sign me up.
No.
Sign me up.
because they had never offered it before. So I created my own curriculum.
Yeah.
And all I knew is that they were going to keep it pretty small. So we were going to have 13 students was going to be the max size on this class. And so that was all I knew. And I had expected it to be mostly guys, but it's not.
Well, in that same breath, if you need somebody to come in to go hang out with, a bunch of co-ed girls, I can clear my schedule for an afternoon.
One of my students is on the path towards the Olympic curling team. She's
no
on like the junior Olympic team, whatever your run up is to competing at the Olympic level. Yeah, so I've got a promising Olympic curler in the class, which is pretty cool.
Have you asked them why, what motivated them or influenced some of those women to be in a sports journalism communications type of class? Like, are they referencing, oh, it's because I saw so-and-so when I was a kid, or, even locally, like, oh, I saw Michelle Tafoya and whatever. Have there been any stories about that?
On day one, we talked about sort of, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
What do you want to get out of this class and why are you here? And mostly it was nobody mentioned anything about Starstruck or that they were emulating another person, male or female. It was, they had a pretty good grip on, I want to work in PR. I want to be Bob Hagen someday. I want to go not by name, but I want to work for a professional team, or I want to work for an agent, or I want to work for an agency that deals with sports. I want to be immersed in sports. I want to be doing something around communications and sports. Hmm. And so, yeah, that was, I didn't get any of that kind of stuff that I had kind of expected, like you did.
Yeah, I would expect with so many women in sports now that there'd be at least some stories of, yeah, when I was growing up, I saw, Leslie Visser, or that might even be too old for some of these gals,
It is, actually. I think it is.
Yeah. But or Aaron Andrews or somebody like that. But
right.
It's
well, what I think that has, they didn't mention those by name, but I think those people have normalized it. So you don't have to even think twice if you are a student that's a female student that's thinking about getting into a sports communications position, right? So yeah, that's the I think people like that. Those have again, they've normalized it, made it okay. You don't have to think twice about it.
And what a great city to do that in, because look at all the sports teams we have.
We have so many.
There's so many opportunities.
Yeah.
And I know that they're not easy jobs to come by, but at least there's opportunity as opposed to like a Des Moines or something like that that doesn't have professional sports teams. Like we've got so many colleges that have so many collegiate athletics that all need communications people.
Yes.
And then we have every major sports team.
And minor, right?
And minor,
so,
yeah.
When people hear this, it'll be last week, but we're having one of the co-founders of the Minnesota Aurora is going to come in and talk to our class. And so, we've got Saints, Aurora, minor league, second tier sports teams as well.
Yeah, it's good for you, professor. Is it weird that they call you professor?
Said, so you got to, that's one of the early things you got to figure out is what I'm going to be called.
Yeah.
I said, Charge is fine, because my whole life I've just been Charge. Or Mr. Charchian. But nobody has ever said it once, I don't think. They've all just been Charge.
Yeah.
That's it.
And it's not a disrespect thing. It's like,
it isn't.
Just Charge.
You know what? I don't need that. I don't need that for respect.
Yeah, who was the coach that berated the media this
for not
last
calling
football
him coach?
Season? Yeah, for not saying, not addressing them as coach so-and-so.
Yeah, that did happen.
Yeah.
And I think you're not my coach.
Yeah, and I think Mike Tomlin then, who's always seems to be the voice of reason.
Yes, it was
Tomlin. I think he came out the next week. He's like, you guys can call me Mike or Mike P or whatever you guys want. Just to rib whoever. God, I forget who that
was. I don't remember
was.
Either, but you're right. It was Tomlin that stepped up
in
that moment.
Yeah.
And it even more absurd is you're not my coach. You know what? That makes it different.
Yeah. For somebody that played sports for a lot of years, I have a hard time talking to a respected coach that was not my coach and maybe not even my current coach.
Mm-hmm.
Well, even take for instance Mike Zimmer. There are times where I have to tell myself that I can call him Mike.
Yeah. Right.
Because
it's ingrained
in me to call him Coach Zim, or something like that. And I'm like, what am I doing? He was never my coach.
Right.
You know, I would call Coach Frazier, or you know, I'd call him Coach still, or Chili, or something like that. Like, I would put Coach with it because they were actually my coach.
Yeah.
But I have a hard time even breaking out of the mold, mental conditioning of, hey, Coach Zim.
Yeah.
I'm like,
right.
Oh, what am I doing? I'm
like, why?
Yeah, why? He's not my coach.
So did you have a great high school coach at some point? So many people that get to the professional level, mm-hmm. when I go back and say, tell me who was the great coach you had, so many professional athletes will identify a high school coach that was fantastic for them. Did you have a great high school coach?
My high school coach, Coach Gary Culver, he was phenomenal. He was great. I mean, we won a state championship my junior year, and that was the fourth state championship for our high school in, 6 years?
Jeez, that is not a coincidence.
Yeah. So my brother, they won three when he was sophomore, junior, and senior.
Wow.
And then there's a couple years off, and then I won one as a junior. So we were really, really successful, but it took him a while to get there. No, my biggest coach that I reference now is Brent Venables, who's now the Oklahoma head coach. Mm-hmm. So he was my linebacker coach at K-State.
Okay.
And he was a ball buster. I mean, he was one of those guys I was, you know, you ever have that person in your life that you're kind of scared to death of? You know, but, and I don't even care what area of your life it is. Could be a coach, could be a teacher, whatever. It could be somebody's, you know, your friend's dad or somebody, but he scared me to death. And I respected him so much, but through that fear, I just never wanted to disappoint him.
Yeah.
You know,
how about that?
And he pushed me so hard. And I look back and I'm like, without him pushing me and without sometimes wanting to be successful in spite of him,
mm-hmm.
you know?
How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, playing angry at your coach.
Yeah, playing angry at my coach.
Yeah.
Got me to the next step or the next level of development and maturation.
Yeah.
But I always lean back and say, like, that dude had a huge influence on me. Was there somebody for you?
My it sounds trivial, but my high school track and cross country coach, Larry Anderson, Eden Prairie, he was hard on us, really hard. He was not
all
there
of you
to make
or just
friends.
You?
All of us.
Yeah.
All of us. Not there to make friends. And that's, you know, that's fine. And I had never experienced anything like that from any teacher or any adult, somebody that just rode me. And he did.
Oh, track and field's so hard. I mean, everybody hates track practice.
Oh.
Even if you have a nice coach. Track practice was the worst.
When did you ever have track practice?
I ran track.
You did?
Yeah,
when?
I ran track. I don't know, springtime, you know?
What did you run?
I was a sprinter.
I was
a sprinter, and then I got stuck on the 4x4 team, which
I
hated.
I love the 4x4.
No, it's the last event of the day.
So what? What does that change?
Because when you're a 100, 200 guy, those are all done during the early parts of the race.
Well, they separate them, right? Because so many people ran both.
I know.
So you need to have time in between
but
to recover.
But there was this big lag, and you know, running track up in the northern states suck. Because it's never good conditions.
No.
It's almost not even until the state meet until you get good weather. Where it's
yeah,
either
for
not,
track.
Yeah,
cross
for track.
Country is the opposite. By the state meet, when I was running the state meet, it's snowing.
Yeah, right.
You know,
yeah.
On our course, we're running in snow.
Yeah. So I hated the 4x4 because my mindset was 200. My mindset was half a lap. Give
that
everything
was it.
You got,
it'd be done.
And then, but thankfully, on the four, I was the lead leg on the 4x4. So thankfully, I could just get it over with. And I, to this day, I'm not exaggerating. I don't know if I ever watched our number two leg run because I was either doubled over a hurdle or laying on the grass because I was so tired.
Ben, you were running for 14 seconds.
No, a 400?
The one? Oh, it's the 400, not the...
Yeah, not the 400. No, not the 400. Yeah, I guess...
All right, so you're running for 67 seconds or something.
Yeah.
Right.
Give me some... Give me better credit than I ran 60. Faster than 67.
All right.
You know.
All right,
yeah.
I hope so.
What did you run? You were a distance guy.
I was distance. So in track, I ran the steeplechase.
You did
That's
not.
The best event of all. It's
they
the best
have high
single
school steeplechase?
They do.
I ran
in college, too. They have the steeplechase, for people that don't know, is the long run. It's a mile, typically, sometimes longer. But it's got the gigantic wooden hurdles. These are not the regular track hurdles that fall forward.
Yeah.
These are the huge posts that do not move. So if you hit the hurdle, you go down. And one of the hurdles has the water trap on the other side of it. That was the best. So I loved it. The steeplechase would start, and everybody's watching the steeplechase because you get to see who's going to wipe out.
I know. There was that disaster effect to it. You wanted to see somebody fall.
For sure. Absolutely.
And how many times did that happen to you?
None. I never did the big wipeout. But I always thought they could make it more interesting. You know, so there's that water pit that's on the other side of the one hurdle.
Yeah.
Piranhas. That'd have made it way more interesting.
I thought I was taking you for real that you really had a legitimate improvement to the steeplechase.
People'd watch it. It would be an improvement for everybody who's watching.
Okay, for real though, since we're talking about running track in the outdoor environments in the northern states, that event has to be the worst because in the early parts of track season, it's cold.
Oh yeah, you're training, you know, now. Right?
Yeah, it's cold, yeah. And then no matter what, your feet are getting wet. Getting soaked.
Yeah, but you're not training for the training you will do on the steeplechase. You're still right now. You're just doing long distance running. I mean, you're just out running 8 miles. You're not training the water pit yet. That happens later when there's snow off the track.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, is there even? This sounds like a silly question, but when you're running the steeplechase, because it's sort of this uncharacteristic obstacle that people are going over. I'm sure there's some practice to it, but did you really have to practice going over the steeplechase?
A little bit, because what happens is, this is getting deep into steeplechase.
Please
right
do.
Here.
Yeah.
When you're fresh, the whole point of the steeplechase is early on when you're fresh, and it's a long race, like I said, at least a mile, right? It's when you're fresh, you can hurdle it pretty easily. Where it gets trickier is when you're tiring, do you try to hurdle it cleanly or do you step on it because it's so big and sturdy?
Mm-hmm.
You can step on it, effectively do a half hurdle, and then sort of, you know, go off it off of that. And so part of the training is, okay, at what point do I have to stop trying to hurdle it cleanly and then do sort of the step up on top of it and then launch from the top of it?
I feel like I would take the approach of always using it as an aid to just jump off of.
The problem is it slows you down a lot.
It slows you down that much?
It does.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So you're going to give up, you know, you're going to give up half a step every time you do that.
Yeah.
So that's the reason not to. You want to just do the clean jump over the top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you ran as well at the U of M?
I ran at, so my, this, I don't, not to bore people with this, but my first year of college was at St. Olaf. And then I couldn't afford to go there anymore.
Yeah.
So I transferred to the U. I was a good enough runner at St. Olaf. I wasn't a good enough runner to run at the U.
Yeah.
So that was the end of it. It was it ended at the U, unfortunately. I didn't get
to run. That's all right, though.
Yeah. But I ran at St. Olaf, which was, you know, at the time was an accomplishment for me, and it was hard.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I always encourage parents will ask me, for whatever reason, as if I'm some sort of expert. They would ask me like advice about their kids going to college or playing sports or whatever. I'm like, I don't know. How am I supposed to give you? But you know, sometimes I get the question of like, well, my kid, if they can't get into Division I or whatever, I think they're just going to give up. And I'm like, well, why?
Yeah.
I go, you
was
know,
the goal to go pro or nothing?
No, I think it's just, I think it's a prestige thing. Like they don't want to, let's say, run track and field at St. Olaf.
Mm-hmm.
Like they want to run track and field at, you know, a Division I school because that's what they've dreamt of.
Yeah.
And I just tell them the value of being a student athlete, and I don't care what sport you're picking, the value of being a student athlete at any level is more important than just being a student at a Division I school.
Totally agree.
You know, and I'm sure that 1 year at St. Olaf, and maybe you didn't realize it when you're at that age, but think about it as you reflect on it now. It's like the value of work and balancing your social life, you know, making sacrifices for what it's going to take to go out to practice every day, to get your homework done, do all that stuff, is way more valuable than just being a student and like maybe working a part-time job.
Oh, hell yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, and all the other things you have to give up, as you know. You know, we'd go. I thought my high school practices were hard, and they were hard, Ben. You know, our average run was probably 8.5-9 miles average.
Ugh.
And then I got to St. Olaf, and we had a really good coach, and Matt Haugen, and we were out running 14 miles fast, hard, And it, you know, I found a whole new gear that I never knew I had. Just through raw effort.
Yeah. Being pushed harder than you thought you could ever go.
Yeah.
But do you think some of that was, I think some of that probably can be just maturation too. You know, you're older.
Yeah, right.
Your older body and like, okay.
You're 19, not 17, 16. Yeah.
Yeah, there's something with that mind, that mind, that brain-muscle balance thing or connection that takes place, and you're like, oh, this is the coordination I need. Oh, when they're telling me to like pick my toes up and, you know, run this way, mm-hmm. like, oh, that's what that is. That's what that feels like. And you start to develop that a little bit more. It's super fascinating.
And even as a freshman, you know, now, so you're a freshman, you're 19, but you're also working out with 20, 21, 22-year-olds that are way more mature.
Yeah.
And then are basically showing you the ropes.
So you still run or no?
I run in the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't in the winter. And it's football season and everything else. So no.
Yeah.
It turned into a lifelong thing. You know, I've run every year, every summer since then. Ran a marathon later in life at 40.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah.
I always, that's the one pastime and activity that I'm envious of, because there's something a little bit romantic about going for a run. And I know a lot of people. I had one neighbor, he's moved recently, but he would come bounding down our street on a cool down or whatever. And I'm like, hey man, you know, how's your workout? He's like, it's good. He's like, I just did, you know, 12 miles. I'm like, huh?
Yeah.
And he's barely sweating. Or like, looked like he was barely sweating. But you know, every runner I talk to, they say it's so therapeutic. You know, it's almost a form of meditation where once you break past that, I don't know if for you, if it was like the mile, like once you get past the mile and sort of your body gets warmed up and you get into your gait and your flow, it is just, you're flowing. You're just almost automatic.
Yeah.
Like your heart rate, it kind of just becomes steady, you know, right there where it needs to be. And it's just like your feet are just turning over without having to think about it. And you can just start thinking about all the little problem solving that you got to do in your life. And people just love it. And I'm like, I would love to find something like that. But dude, if I ran one 5K and I said, I'll never run another fucking 5K in my life. 3.2 miles was enough for you? Max.
So to me, the important part is the unplugging. I'm away, right? I'm not doing email. I'm not social media. I'm not getting texted. You know, for whatever the duration of that run is, it's just me and my thoughts. You know, we all have these great ideas that come to us in the shower.
Yeah.
Because we finally get a moment of solitary concentration. And that's what the run is for however long it is, you just get to be alone with your thoughts. And you don't get many opportunities like that.
Are you a music guy when you run too, or just are you alone?
Yeah, I prefer music, yes. Yeah. But what I find is, you know, at first, when I'm, you know, catchy songs, I got my running playlist and everything. And then before long, I don't really even hear it as much. Again, I'm in my thoughts and I'm figuring out life.
Yeah. This podcast is supported by my friends at Redmond Real Salt. Let's just get this out of the way right now. Go to redmond.life. That's redmond.life. Use the promo code LIEBER, LIEBER, for 15% off your order every time you order from redmond.life. Redmond Real Salt is an ancient sea salt mine right here in Redmond, Utah. I say right here as in the United States. It's not transported from the Himalayas or South America or something like that. It's made right here in the United States. Mixed with my jug of water, it's how I naturally hydrate every morning. I use it as a natural seasoning in all of our cooking, and I also use the ReLight pre-workout mix to enhance all of my workouts. Its purity is simply unmatched. There's no additives. There's no sugar. They only use natural flavoring. Plus, get this, it contains over 65 natural minerals to give your body everything it needs for health, wellness, and activity. It's Redmond Real Salt. Go to redmond.life and use that promo code LIEBER. So let's like go all the way back to, I mean, you have an incredible career and you're still very young.
I'm older than you by far.
I know that, but when it comes to the accolades that you've had, and you're in a profession that you could do until you're dead, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, people aren't going to stop playing fantasy football.
The fantasy sports world, it's only growing.
Mm-hmm.
You're already in the Fantasy Sports Hall of Fame, right? So you're a young man already in the Hall of Fame. Let's go back to the early genesis of the all of it. When did you feel like fantasy football or fantasy sports was what you wanted to get into and how you made a profession out of it?
I was I got out of college in 1991 and with a journalism degree that I never thought I'd use. I was a network administrator, and network administrators were got paid way more money. There were ready jobs available. And I had a job lined up the moment I got out of school. So I was ready to go be a network administrator at a big accounting company in town, McGladrey and Poland. And so I'm working there and I'm running the fantasy football league with the accountants at McGladrey as networking guy, computer guy. And
so just a generic fantasy football, like everybody
does. Yeah, like everybody else does. Okay, yeah. And one of the tax accountants, a guy named Rob Fithian, came up to me one day and said, you know, I do the taxes for the local magazine distributor, Gopher News. And they've got, you know, like 70% of the magazine business in the Twin Cities. He said, I got this idea. You know, there's nothing printed about fantasy football in season. This is 1993. Mm-hmm. There's nothing printed, no published work on fantasy football anywhere after the season starts. There's a couple of preseason magazines and a book. That's it. Nothing. So it's like, why don't we just start a magazine? And so I had the journalism background. I had never done page layout. I had never sold advertising, you know, but I'd written a lot. And I'm like, you know what? We'll try it.
Yeah.
So I became the publisher of the magazine. And in 1993, and we put out a magazine that launched in August with updated player rankings for your drafts in August. All these other magazines are written in May. And we sold out off the newsstand in a couple of days.
Get out of here.
Back on the presses, ran it again.
Your
sold
very
that
first,
out. First
your,
issue.
Your first issue sells out.
Yep. And so we're like, oh man, we're onto something. So now we got to deliver Fantasy Football Weekly magazine every week during the season bet. Now our problem is Gopher News trucks leave Gopher News at 1 a.m. to cover like the whole week. They're all leaving at 1 a.m. Sunday, well, you know, Sunday night at 1 a.m. Okay, so I have to have a 36-page magazine written that's previewing the next week by Sunday at 1. Now, and that's off the presses. So to get on the presses, I got to be done at 9. So now the way we beat it is we would pre-write all 36 pages. We would watch all the games we could manage to watch. Back then, it was before DirecTV and everything else. So we'd watch the games we could manage to watch, and then we would edit all 36 pages on the fly. This guy broke his leg, got to put in the backup. This guy's in the doghouse.
Right,
blah, blah, blah,
right.
Blah, blah. Make all these changes. And we'd run down to Shakopee Valley Press, go on the presses by 9 o'clock so that our distributor could get everything by 1 o'clock. And that was the race that we did for 16 straight Sundays.
That's freaking amazing, dude. That stresses me out thinking about that hustle.
It was crazy. It was, and yeah, it was nuts. So we get to the end of the year, and you don't find out about your sales until you're 90 days off sale is when everything goes official. So we're going through this whole season, and we don't even know how we're doing, if it's selling or not, what you know. And it turned out we outsold Sports Illustrated.
No way.
We're like, wow, this is, you know, we might really have something in this Fantasy Football Weekly magazine. So the next year, Ben, we're like, well, we raised some money. We'll send it to all the NFL cities. So we start shipping the magazine around everywhere, only to find out that the Twin Cities is this massive hub of fantasy sports play, and there's nobody playing in Seattle, LA, Florida. Nobody playing fantasy
because
football there.
Because how new
then.
Was fantasy football at that point in time?
Well, technically, it had been invented in the 60s, but there just wasn't anybody playing mainstream.
Like it wasn't even mainstream
no,
yet.
No, and it wouldn't go mainstream until the internet. It didn't really hit mainstream until like 2000. So we took massive losses and took our lumps figuring out back then, especially, and it's true even now, most people play in cold weather cities.
No kidding.
Yeah. So, you know, we'd crush it in Cleveland, but we couldn't sell in Dallas and or LA. And then you find out which magazine distributors are crooks and who actually gets it on in time. And, it was terrible. It was such a hard business.
Yeah. But you found, like, through it all, I mean, even through some of the failures, obviously you learned a ton about what works, what doesn't work, and where you can be more efficient. And then it led into the website.
It led into the website. So it's late 90s and the .com boom hits. and we decide that we want to expand from just being print only to print and online.
Mm-hmm.
And during this hot, like, 1 year, we raised $10 million in 2 weeks. And it was easy. You know, we had a quasi-viable plan, and that's all you needed to raise money. So we raised $10 million to create fanball.com. And that became our, you know, that became, in time, the magazine went away, and it just became, we became an entirely
online
brand.
Why was it such
an
easy sales pitch and an easy hook for people?
Everybody was rushing to online investments that made any sense whatsoever. And we had one that we had a built-in user base. We could push people from the magazine to the website. We'd ultimately go on to build games, online games, and online commissioner products. So we had a viable pathway. We just didn't have any revenue. Hmm. And so we raised the $10 million. We hired 50 people, and we burned through it in 2 years. We had to file one of the two forms of bankruptcy. I don't remember which one now. We had to reorganize.
No way. We
got down to 8 employees and then built it back up again and ultimately sold it in 2006.
Wow. And who bought it?
Liberty Media. At the time, they owned DirecTV, the Discovery Channel, like, you know, and Liberty Media is still a huge conglomerate.
Yeah.
And they fucked it all up.
We were just
a rounding error to them, and I don't even know why they bought us, and, you know, they screwed it up, and all the best people ultimately ended up leaving.
So at what point in time, going back to the Fantasy Football Weekly magazine that you guys put out, when did you quit your real job? Like, when did
Great
it become
question.
A full-time
yeah. So
job?
I was doing both for 3 years, and then the accounting company was like, you can't keep doing this because it's nights, it's weekends, and yeah.
It was affecting your day job, though?
Well, I didn't think it was, but technically we had all signed an employment agreement that said you couldn't have any outside income from any place else.
Mm.
And ultimately, I wanted to be paid. So there came a day of reckoning where you had to do one or the other. So, yeah, I left a $60,000 job to make $18,000. As the first full-time employee. 18
see,
grand. Yeah.
See, I love stories like that, you know, because it I think everybody loves to see the finish line, and they love to see the success, and you're a success story, but they don't often really think about and chew on the fact that putting yourself in that perspective at that point in time in your life, you leave comfort for the unknown.
Yeah.
And it worked out, but at that point in time, how many people in their own lives are looking at something like, well, I have this opportunity and I could leave a job with benefits and
right.
an income
yeah.
that's nice and steady to something that we're just going to cross our fingers on and we have a passion for, but we don't know if we're going to make it work.
Right. Fortunately, you know, I was young, not married, no kids, you know, so it made it a lot easier. And,
yeah.
you know, I'll eat ramen and do this job that I love. And it helped that we had KFAN, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
So we started the radio show Fantasy Football Weekly in 1995. And that was that helped a ton. And really one of the first break came when I started. Randy Shaver had a show on the station way back then, and I started sending him the magazines. He talked about his fantasy team, and then he started having me on as a guest,
mm-hmm.
and then that turned into the Saturday morning show.
Wow. Yeah. So going back to even when you were just, coming out of college with your first job, how much did you pay attention to fantasy football? Like,
oh,
that was still – that was
Oh,
your,
yeah.
That was
I cared
thing.
A lot. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So even when it wasn't mainstream, like, that was just sort of your deal.
Passion, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it. Competitive – anything competitive, Ben, with friends. Make you know, let me play something competitively with my friends. I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's poker, if it's board games, if it's video games, if it's playing competitively with friends, I love it.
So you weren't just casual guy that paid attention a little bit to fantasy sports and were approached by a coworker and said, "Hey, we should just let's organize this thing." And then you were already pretty passionate about it.
Like, yeah,
you,
very.
You didn't. There was not much of a learning curve for you. Like, you already.
Well, the learning curve was publishing a magazine.
Well, but as far as the research goes and being. You know, sort of the expert and being knowledgeable enough to put out information.
Fortunately, the standard was low then because, you know, when I go back and look at our old issues, it was not the greatest content, but there was no content. Ben, we were literally, it's 36 pages and maybe six of the pages were ads. So I got like 30 pages to fill when
why
there's
did you guys feel like why 30 pages seems like a lot when you come right out of the gate.
Yeah, but that's, you know, to break down all the games and do everything we wanted to do, it was aggressive. It was aggressive. Like, and you got to pay for all those extra pages, and they got to fill the pages. But there was no playbook. Like, what do fantasy people want to read? Nobody knew, because nobody had done it. So, you know, we're trying to figure out on the fly, what do fantasy players want? And how do I write a matchup about the Vikings versus the Lions from a fantasy standpoint? Because it had never been broken down. Nobody had ever broken down an in-season matchup for fantasy style.
Yeah.
We had to invent vernacular.
So with that, I guess that's the other part that I want to talk about is we didn't have the internet then.
And no, it's all pre-internet, yeah.
And this is before the Red Zone channel or DirecTV. I mean, I can't even wrap my brain around how you guys would consume NFL games on a Sunday.
We had four TVs, but we'd only get at most like three games on at one time. And we had stringers in different cities. And if something big went down, the stringer would, you know, back in those days, is even like before email, you know, they would call, go, oh, hey, you know, Ernest Biner broke his leg, you know, that kind of stuff. Because we didn't know.
So as long as you built the template, which you guys did, you kind of pre-built the template, and then you just have to like cross a guy off.
You have to rewrite whole sentences and paragraphs. When Ernest Biner broke his leg, now you're like, oh God, Kevin Mack. Okay, now Kevin Mack's gonna have a huge game because Ernest Biner's out, and now it's gonna be a full load share for Kevin Mack.
Jeez. Yeah. So then, when did you, on a personal level, start to get national attention? You know, when did that, was there another sort of big moment or something like that that kind of puts you on the top of fantasy football and fantasy sports?
Well, this is an indirect answer to that question. I will tell you my favorite moment from those early days, where this is year three of the magazine. I want to say it's August of our third year of publishing. So we have two seasons under our belt. And we just published our big August draft issue, and it's like 60 pages, and it's a ton of work, and it's all updated up to the minute so people could take this fresh magazine to their drafts. And so I take my whole staff out to Las Vegas, and we're sitting poolside at our hotel, and the cocktail girl comes up, and she's got our magazine under her serving tray her draft that night. And I was like, wow, it's real. This is a real thing that's happening. And it was an amazing moment in that moment where you're like, this is really affecting, you know, people out there in the world are getting this. I'm in Las Vegas and my server's got my magazine.
I think that's so, I think that part of it is, I have so much respect for any entrepreneur, right? Because there's a lot of risk involved, but anybody that's creating something like that too, especially a tangible deal, I can't imagine that feeling when you are half the country away, you know, 2,000 miles away or whatever, and something that you created and your team created is right there.
It's wild.
It's wild.
Yeah. The best stuff that's always happened to me for whatever product I've worked on is when something where you get positive feedback about it that you have no control over. That's just totally outside of your sphere. You know, somebody tries now a guillotine league and they love a guillotine league and they're posting it on their blog or something. And I have no connection to that person. That's the stuff that means the most.
Yeah. That's so fascinating. Where do you think that, I mean, it seems like it's hard to imagine when fantasy sports and fantasy football wasn't a part of our culture.
It's kind of
weird because the advent of it and the invention of it is kind of more of 1960s. It doesn't really hit mainstream until maybe the dot-com era.
Yep.
And now it's kind of exploded. And, you know, for me being 43, you know, I do remember as a kid not paying attention to fantasy sports or not even understand what fantasy sports is, even though it was there. But for my adult life, I mean, most of my 20s to now, it's
big.
It's just part of
your
just,
friends play, right?
Oh yeah, well, I'm in a league right now. I've been in a family league for years. And Charge, I'm freaking terrible. I am. Everybody has this expectation that I'm supposed to be
right.
like.
Because you played.
Yeah.
Totally different skill set.
It's a totally different skill set.
Nothing. No relation whatsoever.
And I get it. I don't put the effort into it. I have one uncle that lives in Dallas. Speaking of warm weather versus cold weather. Now, he's in Dallas, and he is our resident guru. I mean, on draft night, the days that we do have, we're connected via FaceTime or whatever. He's the one that has a laptop, his PC, his mm-hmm. phone,
right.
three different magazines.
Yeah.
You know, he's got it all laid out, and he's done all the research.
Yep.
Me, and I'm not lying to you, I just download your deal.
Good, thank you.
I download your like big board.
Oh, great, but you're terrible.
No, but you know, and you don't know how it goes. And we just moved to a true auction draft. Normally,
oh, good.
You know,
yeah, you'll love that,
which is super fun.
Yeah.
But it takes a long time. But that's I don't do any other research other than that.
It's a skill based game. For everybody who thinks fantasy sports is gambling, Ben, in this story, is the example of why it's not. If you don't do the work, you're usually going to lose.
Yeah.
And it's the in-season stuff that'll really get you.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I also don't put in a ton of effort during the season.
Yes.
Because I'm just focused on other things, and I get the alert like, hey, make sure that your lineup's
you haven't
good
put
to
in
go.
A lineup yet.
I even had a week last week or last year where I had two guys on a bye week and I forgot to change it out.
No, you're
like,
that guy.
Well, shit, there goes that game. Like, yep. I've got two guys in the starting lineup that are not playing.
Yeah. It's happened to most people. You know, that happens, unfortunately.
Are you someone who deals with chronic soreness? Maybe it's sore and achy joints from an old injury, or you're an active person who pushes their bodies, or maybe it's age-related arthritis. Whatever the cause, I have the solution for you. It's called IASO, IASO, and it's a revolutionary therapy device that uses 100-year-old scientifically proven cold laser technology. This South Korean wonder device is the only cold laser device that can be used at home and hands-free. Most of the time, you have to go to some sort of hospital or clinic to get this type of treatment because of the size of the machine. But IASO has engineered this potent light therapy into a device that fits into the palm of your hand. I use my devices all the time on my arthritic knee and my bulging disc in my neck with relieving results. And guess what? It's all done pain-free. Go to wellscare.net or bestbuy.com. That's wellscare.net or bestbuy.com to purchase and start enjoying your life pain-free with IASO.
But you pay attention to other things outside of football, though. You're involved in other fantasy sports, right?
Well, not really. You know,
I thought you were a basketball guy as well.
Fanball.com supported every sport.
Mm-hmm.
But then my second company, LeagueSafe, also supported every sport. But just from a content standpoint, if it's always football season, Ben. Always.
It is.
You know, look at free agency that we're in the middle of now. It's news every hour. And so it's just become I can't possibly use my time better than just mm-hmm. focusing on football. It's 80% of the fantasy market.
Yeah. For the fantasy football people out there that even feel like they put in the effort, is there a common mistake that people make that you see when you talk to people, or you're going to generate your league, or you're going to people are going to go into their drafts, whether it's auction or snake or whatever it is? Is there like one common misconception or mistake that people make?
They replay last year. Mm. You know, they just, you know, whatever happened last year, Cooper Kupp, that's it. You know, he's going to be great. And, you know, the temptation is just to roll over the previous year. And the people that win are the ones that go against that trend and find the players who are going to be better than they were last year and have the guts to do it. So, yeah, that's, I think, the single biggest mistake that fantasy players make is replaying the previous year in their head.
I'm sure that everybody's rethinking their Christian McCaffrey take selection from this last year.
Right.
You know.
And the year before.
And the year before.
Yeah. And that's – so are you going to have the guts to take Christian McCaffrey after two lost seasons in the first round? Because right now there's already drafts happening, and he's going late first round.
Wait, how are the drafts happening right now?
There are people that draft football all year round, and mostly in the best ball format.
What is that?
The best ball format means I draft a team today, and I hold the draft online, and then I never touch that team again. The computerized system will optimize my lineup every single week, and then play out the whole season. And I never even I never even touch that lineup and look at that team again. I don't manage it at all. I can just go in and see the results every week.
But what's the fun of doing that in March?
Because it's football. And people love football, Ben. But if you're don't even want the off, there are people that don't even want the off season.
That's so interesting because we are, like you mentioned, we're in, and I'm time stamping this. You know, Christian Kirk just signed a huge mega deal to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
The absurd money.
It's absurd, stupid money. He doesn't deserve that. But the Jaguars have a ton of money to spend. Whatever. I mean, I guess fine if they think that he's gonna be better for Trevor Lawrence. Great. But if somebody's in one of these leagues, they're drafting, you know, like, where do you put a guy like Christian Kirk?
How about rookies? Where do you put drafting rookies right now? You know, so, and you don't even know what team they're going to land on. But that's part of it, is people think they're smart enough to know that I can take Mitch Trubisky in the 17th round before he signs with Pittsburgh. And ta-da, now I've got a starting quarterback that I got in round 16.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it still just as fun for you to pay attention to the NFL as it was, you know, decades ago?
I know the right answer is yes, but honestly, 27 years later, and with a longer season, the grind is hard. You really don't get any off time anymore.
Mm-mm.
The month of June is about... it's kind of slow, but you have to be all prepped up for July and August when your fantasy cycle is going to go crazy. So,
yeah. You know, could you give the audience a little bit of a sort of a timeline of how your year looks when it comes to the preparation?
Yeah. So, you know, we know everybody's going to be drafting in late August and or very early September. That's 80% of drafts will happen in 3 weeks in late August and early September. So to be ready for that, I have to be prepping for that in a variety of ways. In some ways, it's just like making my cheat sheet available for Ben Lieber so you can download it. In other ways, it's getting my entire website ready to handle people who want to try a guillotine league. And all the, you know, all everything I've done off season has to be ready. I'll get 80% of my revenue will come in those 3 weeks. For the whole year will come in 3 weeks. So I got to be ready for that. So my off season is every feature I want to add on to the website. It's handling my writers, it's getting my rankings ready, it's testing features on the website, on Android, on iOS. So that's the off season. And then in season, it's crazy, Ben. It is long hours every single day. On, you know, Sunday is watching all the games, right? Mm-hmm. So Sunday's watching, you know, it starts in the morning when we're getting all the deactivations and everything, and I'm tweeting deactivations and everything. It's watching all the games and tweeting all the observations and everything. Monday is I already start working on my player rankings for the next week. Tuesday is like waiver wire stuff. You know, Wednesday and Thursday is out of market radio. So I'll do usually 12, 13 radio hits.
Come on.
Yeah. So do like Chicago, Philadelphia, Las Vegas, Kansas City, do all those. Yeah. Friday is here at the station doing the Friday football feast, and then we record Fantasy Football Weekly. Saturday, I see my wife, and then I repeat it. Yeah.
I know that you're kind of semi-joking, but I'm guessing that's mostly
that
true.
That is mostly true, yeah.
That is wild, you know? And
You were a professional athlete. You know what that's like, where you do this on Monday, you do this on Tuesday.
I mean, I love I love having a routine, and I'm sure you enjoy a little bit of routine, but it's a long routine. I think the more that I've gotten into like what you do, and you and I working together, and watching your prep, which is amazing. You have so much prep and so much content, but when it comes to fantasy football, there's so much cause and effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if X player goes down, obviously the easy answer to this is going to elevate this guy to go up.
Yeah.
But if and we're just talking one player. Now, if there's multiple players on an offense that go down, well, how does that work when they're playing a defense that they're going to play next week? What does that roster look like?
Right.
And all of that.
Huge part of it.
And I think what you put so much time and effort in is you also understand who the coaches are, what scheme that they're doing, you know, running, what trends they're on, is if this player is kind of going the right direction or the wrong direction.
Yeah.
You know, there's other stuff behind just player transactions.
It's not just the 120 offensive players that are sitting on fantasy rosters. you kind of have to know the 120 offensive players behind them and all the defenses and how all those defenses work. It's a lot. It's that's a lot of it.
At what point in time do you ever look at your prep and say that's too much? Maybe not too much, but you're getting too much into the weeds. Like I might be overthinking this.
Depends on who you're talking to, right? On my fantasy show, I almost can't, other than time considerations. I've got 2 hours to, exactly 2 hours to fill. So if I want, I could spend 2 hours on one damn matchup. You know, Vikings, Lions, that's it. You could drill down on that for 2 hours if you wanted to. But, you know, we're trying to spread it out across 16 games. So you get limited by time a little bit, but you can get so nerdy in the fantasy show. And that's what's changed the most, Ben, in the 27 years or whatever it's been, is the fans are so much more knowledgeable and I have so much more data available and I can be so much smarter. When I listened to the old shows, we just didn't know.
Yeah.
We just didn't have any data available. You know, we didn't know if cornerbacks were, you know, if cornerbacks were playing man-to-man. Do they play sides? You know, there's just so much that we didn't have available and knowledge we couldn't know. And now there's so much more. And people's expectations are so much higher.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I know that with the information age, sometimes there can be too much information. And it's like, how do you, like you said, you could find one matchup and you could really hyper-analyze it. And you're like,
for sure.
Well, okay, when you're finally done with your 8 hours of prep or doing one matchup, you're like, well, shit, that like half this isn't like shouldn't even be relevant. You know, like
right, exactly.
They're actually gonna play a game on field, on grass, not on a piece of paper.
Right. It's not gonna be simulated.
Yeah, it's not gonna be simulated.
Yeah.
And I think it's so fascinating that if you even for my prep, even just doing games, I like to go on certain either a fantasy site or just when I Google things, oftentimes, betting sites, betting analysis, and fantasy analysis comes up on the top hits Google.
Yeah,
and a lot of times, and you know this, there's so much so many good nuggets in some of that stuff.
There are
a lot, and you know, I think you've known me long enough. Like, I'm not a huge numbers guy. Like, I don't really lean into the stats that much. Because I love to watch the games and just kind of give my opinion on just how the game is played or certain styles of the whatever. But I love even when I'm just doing a college football game or something, some of those little number nuggets are awesome.
They're helpful.
They're really helpful. And they are validating.
Yeah. Now, for you, you're a player. You can just say, you know, my experience tells me this. And, you know, listeners or viewers go, yeah. Okay, you can do that. I can't. I never played the game. So I feel like I always have to validate my assertions all the time.
But I feel like you're in a spot now with your expertise that I could see people just giving you pushback because it's – look, there are even some guys out there that were backup quarterbacks that get that. Like Dan Orlovsky gets that every once in a while. Dan's fantastic on ESPN,
yeah,
right?
He's
great.
Yeah.
But people will – clap at him and be like, well, you're just a backup. What the hell do you know? You know, it's like, dude, shut up. All right.
That's
but
ludicrous.
I guess in a long-winded way, I think you've watched enough damn football that you could, not every fantasy football person could, but you could just say from your heart and from your own opinions, I think X, Y, and Z is going to happen because of A, B, and C reasons.
Yeah.
And people would trust that.
And sometimes I do that, where I'll just say, look, this guy just passes the eye test. This guy's special.
Yeah.
I don't need to quantify it. Just look at him play. And sometimes you do that.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of questions for you.
Wow, we're turning this around.
Yeah, I'm turning it around.
Okay.
You don't mind?
No, I don't mind.
All right, cool. Number one. I saw you had Darren Sproles on recently. Darren Sproles, I watched a K-State game that he was in. And I don't follow college during the football season because I'm so immersed in NFL.
Yeah.
And, you know, you are gifted at doing both. I can't do both. And I wrote his name down my bulletin board. And I'm like, I got to track this guy. This guy is so special. So I wrote his name down on my bulletin board. And I remember talking to a couple of scouts before the draft. And they were like, you know, I don't think we're going to take him, but I get the feeling everybody's going to wish they'd have drafted him. And he ended up sliding to the Chargers in like round four,
yeah,
five,
I think that's right. Yeah.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was great with the Chargers, and they never should have released him. And then he was great with the Saints, and he was good with the Eagles. And he ended up finishing top 10 all-time in all-purpose yards.
I believe that's correct, yeah.
Should Darren Sproles be in the Hall of Fame?
I think so. You know, to me, I don't think, and clearly I'm biased. You know, I love Darren, and, you know, obviously with so much K-State pride, I would love to see him get in the Hall of Fame. But to me, a sports Hall of Fame should also inspire. And I think that not only should some players be applauded for being trendsetters and creating a new standard of that position, mm-hmm. right? And I think the easiest one for me that I can say is Warren Sapp. You know, nobody thought that that position on the defensive yeah. line could be a playmaker.
So disruptive. Yeah.
Could be so, yeah, so disruptive. And so I think he should be in Canton in the Hall of Fame for sort of bucking the trend, mm-hmm. you know, breaking out of the labels and the molds that, listen, you can find athletes. I mean, Aaron Donald obviously is doing something that, you know, people can't do from that position and have never done from that position. And I think for guys like Darren, yeah, you can point to some of the stats and stuff like that, and there are some supporting stats, like you said, you know, all-purpose yards. And imagine if he was actually healthy. I mean, he had a number of significant injuries, right?
ACLs, yeah.
But I think when the numbers are there, and I think you can argue some of the numbers, but then you put on top of that his stature, always being
5 foot yeah, 7 to 8,
yeah, always being overlooked, mm-hmm. Just to make it that level, I think there should be some room in the Hall of Fame, in every Hall of Fame, to say we value heart, we value good character, we value this. Like, this is the epitome of what professional football should be. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that he deserves to get in.
You think character should be a consideration for the Hall of Fame?
At times.
It can be a disqualifier.
But so I will, you know, I'm going to be hypocritical. I do think that there are some players, you know, like Terrell Owens, that they just aren't liked.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and how fair is that? You know, he went out and played a game and produced on the field and should be rewarded for that. He got paid for it. He should be honored for his play on the field. But people don't like him, you know, and he
to some degree, it is a popularity.
It is a popularity contest. And so maybe I'm not being hypocritical, but if you're going to hold somebody's character accountable for a reflection on the quote unquote shield, well, then a guy like Darren Sproles, who did it the right way, mm-hmm. should be rewarded for that. You know, is a great representation of what the shield is and a great representation of giving somebody a chance, you know, and a guy that will take it full circle. You should put down on your list Deuce Vaughn. Deuce Vaughn is the running back out of Kansas State that is the same size as Darren Sproles, and I believe he's breaking all of his records right now. And will probably get more of a shot at the NFL because of a guy like Darren Sproles, mm-hmm. You know, sort of carving the path out. But Deuce Vaughn is a legit player, but he's about 5'5".
that's a worry.
Yeah.
That's a worry for
yeah.
some.
Yeah. Yeah, you should look at the highlights of Deuce Vaughn.
I don't have his name on my bulletin board yet, but I will put him on now.
Yeah. I believe he'll play this one more year at K-State, and then he'll leave for the draft.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And he'll probably be a third rounder. I mean, he'll have all the numbers to back up. You know, if he was 5'9", 5'10", mm-hmm. he would be a first round pick. But because of his height, you know, he'll probably be a third rounder.
I want to tell you my favorite Ben Lieber story.
Okay.
And you probably won't remember this. You and I had our paths crossed while you were a player several times, maybe mm-hmm. 3-4 times. And you were always very friendly, very nice guy. And we had some good conversations. But what you did in the airport was different. Mm. One time I was at baggage claim, MSP, and minding my own business. And this is while you were playing. And you came up to me and you said hi. Hmm. And I don't think an active player had ever done that before. Not active. There have been times when there have been players that are post-career that still, you know, want to get on KFAN or they want to do something. At that point, I serve a utility for them.
Yeah.
And they're willing to be friendly. You are an active player and you came up and your wife was there and you introduced me to your wife. You were coming back from like St. John's or something. It was somewhere in the Caribbean, yeah. I think. Off of a spring break.
Bahamas, probably. Yeah.
Bahamas. And I thought that was super cool. I was like, all right, this is a legitimately good guy.
Yeah. And well, thank you.
There aren't that many active players that do that. I thought that was super cool.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. Which it really is unfortunate because, you know, I've always tried to approach the profession of football as really is just a job, you know, and it's not. Yeah, it carries a prestige to it. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I get it, but at the end of the day, I mean, you're just doing a job. Like, I don't know.
It's well, like, so it's in some ways it is just a job. In other ways, it's not like any other job.
I know.
It is.
I guess I've always tried to downplay the importance of it. Mm-hmm. You know, the cultural importance of it, and you know now obviously it's I think I understand the importance of the game more so now than I did as a player. If that's kind of
you have different perspective.
I have a different perspective of it because I see now what it means to people more than I did as a player because you insulate yourself so much as a player.
Yeah,
you know, and you take on a very selfish approach and a very guarded and sort of you put your blinders on to the rest of the world. You know, and for sometimes it's just protective mode, and other times it's because you're just trying to make it on a day to day basis, and you've got your own issues to worry about. And then when it comes to the off season, you just disconnect. And, you know, so there's never like this true connection of knowing how important it is for the fans or for the country or whatever, because it's, you know, it's our country's pastime. But now in this world, you know, in the broadcasting world and you're covering and like you said, the freaking NFL never stops, man.
Nope.
Like people are so hungry for news all the time, no matter what. I mean, it's amazing to me when we were at the combine, and I made this comment that I walked in the hotel room to check in, and we had just celebrated the Los Angeles Rams winning the Super Bowl after a long season of NFL play. And it seemed like a very short few weeks, and everybody's like, all right, we're on to the next season.
Next season, right? Turn the page.
Yeah, here we are already looking at the prospects for the next year. Like, who cares about 2021? Mm-hmm. We're on to 22. It's like, golly, it's like you just turn the page that fast.
It does. It is amazing, isn't it?
It's amazing.
And people are ready. I mean, if you're a fan of insert team here, Atlanta Falcons, you know, your mind flipped over to 2022, you know.
Yeah.
Moment the season ended, really.
Yeah.
And now we're all already in 2022 mode.
Yeah.
You know, reshaping rosters, rejiggering contact tracks, free agency. Yeah, it never ends. It's great.
So then let me, as we sort of just wind this thing down, I do want to get your thoughts, though, on, you know, the biggest news in the Vikings land is the Kirk Cousins 1-year extension. You know, they played around with some money and they voided, you know, 2 years in 24 and 25 and, you know, spread out his cap charge. I think that was the most important piece spread out the cap charge. Are you yay or nay on the 1-year extension for Kirk?
I think it's perfect, honestly. You don't have a 4-year commitment. You don't have another, you're not tacking on 3 more years.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives you enough runway that if Kirk really isn't the guy to take you to where you want to be, you've got 2 years to find and groom the replacement, right? Who's your next quarterback? So you've got some runway. Mm-hmm. His cap hit this year goes down by either 14 or 15 million.
14, I believe, yep.
And then his cap hit next year, he's going to get paid less next year than he's getting paid this year. So, you know, all in all, I thought it was a very measured first big move by Kwesi. We'll see how it plays out. I know there are people angry that they extended him even 1 year, but this gives you a runway to find the right quarterback. Because, man, when you are desperate for quarterback, you sign Mitch Trubisky.
Yes. Yes. 100%. Like, how many Vikings fans out there would be happy if we traded Kirk for whatever, picks, you know, probably not a one-for-one on a quarterback exchange, and then you're landing Mitch Trubisky as, like, a free agent quarterback? Sell that to me.
How?
You can't.
You know, you can't win. You know, that's not a pathway to a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, for Kirk, we're taking a new head coach who was the offensive coordinator for the Super Bowl winning team who took a sub 500 veteran quarterback to a Lombardi trophy. We're going to ask Kevin O'Connell to be the head coach and play caller for a, I think, at least as good, you know, statistically better quarterback, veteran quarterback, to do something not that dissimilar here. It's you know, I'm on board.
I'm on board. I kind of had a feeling based off of our previous conversations and the things that you put out on Twitter, which are great, that we'd feel very similar about it. It would have been fun if you were on the opposite side of it, only because I don't understand the opposite side of the Kirk hate. I think it's for sport, especially on social media.
It's a good way to put it. Yeah.
You know, I do think that there are some people out there, there's a large group of people out there that for the sport of it, they just want to be Kirk haters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you could probably say that for a lot of quarterbacks, but especially him. I don't understand the polarization of Kirk Cousins. You know, is it because he's plain white toast personality-wise? Is that if that's the reason why you hate him, dude, that's a really shallow approach for an argument of whether or not that guy should be your starting quarterback.
Well, they would say it's not, you know, and believe me, I've got all the talking points of the Kirk haters down pat because they come at me literally every day on Twitter. They would say it's not that he's milquetoast, it's that he's not a leader. They think, from what they can view from their couch, that he's not a leader. Kirk is not a leader. That's a common refrain. They will point to his record a lot. I believe that it's a team sport. It's the ultimate team sport. And that Kirk can't play defense. He's, you know, it's not like tennis or golf where you're on the field all the time, right? He's not even on the field for all of the defensive plays and any of the special teams plays. I tweeted a couple of days ago, in games over the last 3 years, the average points allowed is 22.3. Across the NFL, okay. Last 3 years. If the Vikings had just had an average NFL defense, they'd have played 25 games in Kirk's time here at 22.3 points allowed or less, and Kirk would have generated 21 out of 25 wins. He would have won 21 out of the 25 games since coming here, in which if the Vikings had just posted an NFL average defense.
You know, I that's when I love the numbers that can support an argument, because I have been saying for the last at least the 2 years, maybe not the 3 years, that if the Vikings defense was just average.
Yeah.
Average.
Right.
And I'm talking, you know, not even, I would even say even slightly below average.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you are looking at 15-16 as being obviously average, that's the median. If they're the 18th ranked defense this last year,
yeah.
They're a playoff team.
For sure.
And possibly making some noise.
Many of those close losses would have been wins.
Yes.
If you're not giving up, whatever, 30 a game? I think they gave up 30 a game last year.
Yeah. And just terrible defense. And I'm like, wait, how can you explain that?
Especially.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and then they say, well, you know, look at his third down percentage. Well, somebody on Twitter pointed out the fact that, you know, somebody supported with numbers that we had the worst first down run efficiency in the league.
We did.
So we were getting stuffed at the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage more than any other offense in the league. And you're getting on me about Kirk not converting on third down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's because he's in third long every time.
Right. Like, nobody converts that.
Nobody converts that.
Yeah. It's
you know?
Hard.
I don't know. I think it's a good deal. I do think it's a win-win situation for both sides. And I think that you're not attaching yourself to him for 5 or 6 years. Look, I don't expect them to take a high-round draft pick quarterback in this draft. But if you were to think, I think every coach, especially an offensive-minded head coach like Kevin O'Connell, they could draft a quarterback in next year's draft, which there's already more talent in next year's draft at quarterback than this year.
Yeah, for sure.
They could draft a first or second round draft pick, not hurt anybody's feelings, because Kirk's going to know.
He knows.
Contract-wise, he knows.
Yep.
Okay, so you're not going to hurt anybody's feelings. You're not going to get an Aaron Rodgers situation where he's going to pout and he's going to, you know, bitch and moan about drafting a quarterback. And then you're going to have – that guy's going to have 1 year to learn behind one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the game. And – If he's not your guy in that following year, well, then maybe you missed. But you're going to have a full year to play behind Kirk
right.
to figure it out.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's a great situation, and you know, I think that he could take what he does, all of his attributes, and be a playoff pushing quarterback. As long as the defense is there.
Well, they're listeners right now that are saying, how many playoff wins does he have? And you know what? It's a team game. I can't put, and The one playoff win that he's got, by the way, epic.
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 Yeah, well, the throw to Thielen was
one of the best throws in the history of the game. Of the Vikings. History of the team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they want to discount it.
No. Not clutch. Not clutch. How many times I got to hear that?
So, okay, I will end with this. And I will – it's not really breaking news, but it is a little bit. And I'll say it on this podcast with you. And I haven't even talked about this with PA. I have not talked to this about this on The Fan. And I will eventually. And I'll say something very similar. But let me just say this to everybody that says that he's not a leader.
Correct.
I will agree with you for the most part, okay? Up until this point, I do think that he lacks some of the intangibles that most people are looking for in that position, okay? He's not Brett Favre, all right? I do think Stafford has more intangibles than he does, okay? But there was a situation that happened this offseason that I'm privy to the information that has galvanized that locker room towards Kirk in ways that
the
public does not know.
Really?
There was an incident. There was a meeting. There was all of the biggest names on the team at this meeting, and Kirk blew everybody away.
Really?
Guys.
In how he handled it?
In how he handled it. The things that were said, the things that were said in that group, because it wasn't just players. There were other people within the organization that were there.
Okay.
And apparently a couple of the guys walked out of that meeting and said, Kirk's our dog.
Really?
Kirk's our freaking dog. So. And
this meeting happened, these meetings usually happen when something bad has happened, right? Usually if there's this kind of situation where everybody's getting together, it's to fix a problem or to address a problem.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yes. Okay.
And so apparently Kirk came in very prepared for this type of meeting, and apparently he'd been taking notes all season long.
Really?
And laid it all out.
Wow.
And I guess the guys were like, damn. You know, this is a guy that we can ride with that's going to have our backs at all times, even when we don't feel like he's paying attention, or even when we feel like he's a little disconnected because he's in his own world and he's got his own routine and all this other stuff. Kirk's been listening and Kirk's been writing stuff down, and Kirk has the team's back. And I guess that's why I was really excited when they did announce the extension, that I want to see what this guy does with a head coach that actually respects him.
Nah, I agree.
You know?
It's become very clear that, you know, the relationship between him and Zimmer was totally fractured.
Toxic.
And I just, knowing Kirk, do you think it was Kirk's fault? I mean, does Kirk generate toxic relationships?
No.
I don't think so.
I think Zim just wanted one of his guys.
Yeah.
And I think Zim, being an old school guy, wanted an old school approach. You know, he would have been great with a guy like Brett Favre.
Yeah.
You know, I think he'd be great with like a Gardner Minshew, you know, with that personality. He'd be probably great with a guy like Nick Foles, you know, that throws caution to the wind. I think he wants that approach. You know, I think he wants a little bit more gunslinger. And that's not Kirk. That's not who he is. He's a little more calculated.
Yeah.
And I think for whatever reason, they were oil and water.
This new head coach will, you know, I want to think you can sculpt an offense around a calculating, accurate, strong-armed quarterback who never misses a game and can make clutch throws like the Saints, like the Carolina throw at the pylon in overtime or the last drive of the game.
Yeah, overtime.
Yep. I mean, I want to believe we've got a coach who can maximize that, because we haven't to this point.
Yeah. And guess what? Just like we talked about, the offense doesn't have to be much better. You know, they fell off the last couple games of the season, you know, especially that Green Bay game, because Kirk was out with COVID or whatever. Their stats took a huge hit. They were a top 10 offense, I think, going into the last couple weeks of the season. And then, you know, they just didn't perform because Kirk wasn't on the field and whatever. It was a top 10 offense with a rookie offensive coordinator. The offense doesn't have to be much better. They can be. I would love it if they were top 5 offense, but fix this stupid defense, and we are.
So do you? Okay, let me ask you this. So, do you draft Do you draft for defense? And there's so much need on defense, right? We don't have a starting safety right now. We don't have starting cornerbacks right now. We're shifting to a 3-4 half of the time, whatever. Tons of need. But what if the draft falls in such a way that you can get your guard and you can get your center and maybe even there's an elite receiver in the first round and you could try to go Bengals and go three amazing receivers? There's a case where you could just say, we're going to outscore everybody this year. You know, well, we can't fix the defense in 1 year anyway. Let's just go outscore.
You know, I think the argument, well, we'll see what happens with Thielen.
Yeah.
You know, and let's be honest here, people. I mean, for the Viking fans out there, you know, there possibly is going to be some really tough decisions that have to be made. Maybe by the time people hear this. So if Adam Thielen is dealt and he's no longer on the team, you could make the argument that, well, we know that Justin Jefferson is going to want to break the bank here in a couple of years, mm-hmm. you know, and he's going to deserve it. Especially after what Christian Kirk just got.
No kidding.
The standard has been set.
By the way, if you reboot quarterback, you get rid of Kirk, and then whoever you bring in Mitch Trubisky, good luck keeping Justin Jefferson
in
2 years.
Yeah.
He's gone.
Exactly. 100%. Which is what Allen Robinson was just pissed about in his last couple of years in Chicago. Is like, here's an elite receiver that doesn't get any respect because nobody can throw him the ball.
Right.
He can't produce because he's got terrible quarterback play.
Yep. But including Justin Fields, who, you know, maybe he pans out. But that's what everybody wants the Vikings to do, is go get Justin Fields. And how do you keep it, unless you nail it and you get Joe Burrow, how do you keep Justin Jefferson?
Yeah. So anyway, do you want to hedge yourself and just get another dynamic wide receiver? Now you have two. And now if you lose Justin Jefferson, hopefully you hit on another Justin Jefferson and you've got another couple years on a rookie contract with a younger guy. That's in play. I'm of the belief, I still think that if you're win now mentality, I think that you hit the free agent market with some second, you know, hopefully first tier cornerbacks, which there really are none. There's a lot of guys over 30 that just I don't think you're going to fit. But you load up free agency on corner.
Yeah.
Because it's such a long progression to become elite in this league and good in this league, that I could see wide receiver. Absolutely see a guard or something like that, not in the first round, because I think even Linderbaum, they think, is a little bit of a stretch at 12, and they don't think that he can play guard. And I have the belief that I think they are going to ride with our current situation right now at center. I think it's pass rush. I think it's bolster that defensive line. I could see Michael Pierce not being around, you know. Go big on defensive tackle or edge rusher and like we've been talking about, build up that defense.
Yeah, the defense has got to get way better.
Yeah. Charge, this was great, man.
It was a lot of fun.
Thank you so
Thanks.
Much. I really appreciate it. I'll do all the quick stuff on the outro, which I'll record here in a little bit. But just let everybody know where they can find you across all of your platforms.
Doing. Twitter's my main thing. At Paul Charchian. That's pretty easy, except you got to spell Charchian. Yeah. GuillotineLeagues.com. If you want to try a new way to play fantasy football. GuillotineLeagues.com. It's really, really compelling. It's like playing in the playoffs every single week, because every week you could get knocked out. So it's a ton of fun.
Yeah. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks.
See ya. Well, that is going to do it for us here at Unrestricted. Thank you, Charch, so much. And again, please go to LeagueSafe.com, GuillotineLeagues.com as well. And you can find him on Twitter at Paul Charchian, Charchian, Paul Charchian. Thank you so much for all your insight, for sharing your story. Absolutely incredible. I love hearing stories about entrepreneurs and all the struggles and the heartache and the decisions, the forks in the road that they have to make on the road to success. Thank you guys as the fans. I really, really appreciate you guys always supporting this podcast, mentions, telling your friends, your family. And like I said in the last few podcasts, if you guys have suggestions on certain topics that you guys would like to learn about, I will do my absolute best to find the most well-respected and educated people to speak on those topics. You can actually reach out to me at benlieber.com. There is a email function there in which I will check those emails as they come into my inbox. So thank you guys so much for your suggestions. I'd like to thank my friends at Redmond Real Salt. You can go to redmond.life, type in the promo code LEBER, Lieber, for 15% off of your entire order at checkout.
Go to redmond.life for all of their products. They have more products than I can even imagine and tell you about. Look, I use their hydration drink. I use their pre-workout mix. And I use their just regular ancient sea salt for all of my cooking and for proper hydration in the morning. So go to redmond.life. Use that promo code Lieber for 15% off. I also want to thank EOSO. It's the world's only at-home hands-free cold laser therapy device. Whew, it's a lot to say, but I use my EOSO device all the time for my neck pain, for my knee pain, for anything that I come across in which I'm just being an idiot and hurt myself. So go to wellscare.net to order one of those, or go to bestbuy.com and just type in IASO for your cold laser therapy device. That's going to do it for us here at Unrestricted. Thank you, guys. We'll talk to you on the next one. See ya!